Boy, a pleasure to have Bruce Jenkins with us. Bruce, how are you this morning?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. You just got to yell out the window, that's all.
Okay, well, let's talk a little ball.
Okay, here we go. All right, hey. There were two guys sitting at the counter screaming at each other. I like it. Very good. Hey, this Bay Bridge series, you know, I was thinking, the Giants had a note yesterday in their notes about two-team cities and how the Giants and the A's have, when you look at the winning percentages, are right up there with New York and Chicago and everything else. And then I started thinking about the way these games are played, Giants-A's. Bruce, I think it may be the most unique games out there of all the rivalries going on right now.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. I mean, there are people on the north side of Chicago that have yet to go to the south side and see the White Sox in, you know, in 40 years, and vice versa. New York was always, you know, especially interesting. It's, you know, when you live there, especially with the three teams there, and loyalties were very, very well set. It's not quite as fierce of a rivalry out here, but it was really good to see last night. I mean, the A's have basically been drawing nobody. All of a sudden, they get 40,000 plus, and a lot of those people were, as Josh Harrison said, a few too many people in orange and black that I would have preferred. But, you know, a great, lively crowd, and of course, it's going to go right back to desolation when the Giants leave Oakland. But, you know, it is, it was great in this particular game. You know, good for the A's for feeding off that energy. They played great. They definitely earned the win, and unfortunately, a lot of people were really ticked off about the ludicrous parking situation and were stuck in traffic forever, and so that was a big mess. But yeah, it's unique. You know, I have been to the other cities where these rivalries are in play, and it's a lot more pronounced. But we have, you know, we're just lucky since 1968 to have a team from each league in the area. And I don't care how it plays out; it's a great thing to have.
Yeah, there's just something about the way the games are played. They're unique. They're just different. And I don't know what it is about. I think Dave Fleming mentioned it last night on the postgame wrap. There's something weird about these two teams playing each other, whether it's in San Francisco or Oakland. So I'll leave it at that. Do you get that feeling at all?
Well, I never even warmed to it at all. I thought the Bay Bridge series was something I could easily miss for years, you know, in spring training and interleague. Yeah, it's... I mean, last night was those certainly weren't the Giants out there that we've seen. it's a pretty broad stroke to paint, you know, all these years in one stroke, but I can't even answer it. But I don't think it's nearly on the whole as great as the other inner city rivalries.
No, it's different, and I guess that's the point. It's just different the way they play. But while we were talking, a pennant race broke out, and both of these teams are in it. The Dodgers have won 12 out of 13. The Giants are still playing great ball. When they lose a game, you say, how did that happen? But all of a sudden, the dog days of August are starting to look like we got a pennant race.
Yeah, and, you know, it's great. I mean, you know, I think the Dodgers for a while thought, you know, we're playing good ball now. We can't make up even a game on these guys. But all of a sudden, it's a game and a half, and we're just set up for a fantastic stretch drive. The Padres are pretty well out of it. There's no way they're going to pull a Giants of 51 and make up a 12-game deficit. I don't think. I mean, it's possible, but... But Giants Dodgers, what more can you ask? And A's Houston is a really good rivalry too. I mean, the Astros took them out last year. Dusty Baker managing and Bob Melvin, those guys have a ton of respect for each other. The Astros are very, very good. They've been terrible lately, but then all of a sudden they've picked it up. They're up 2.5. That's going to go down to the wire. I don't see Seattle really hanging in there. So we could have two really fantastic races right here in the Bay Area right through the end of September.
Yeah, the A's in Houston, I think, play 6 of the last 9 with
Seattle in the
middle of that for the A's. I think that's the deal. So, yeah, it's going to go down to the end. You wrote about Posey this week, and it's something you and I have talked about, Hall of Fame. And, you know, we talk about Yadier Molina, and I'm a big Salvador Perez fan these days.
Yeah, me too.
But for Posey, you nailed it pretty well.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, that's something that's been – a conversation going two ways in the last few years. I mean, A couple of years ago, when he comes off the hip surgery, and he's certainly not the same hitter, nor is anyone coming off that operation. Then he takes a year off, and people are saying, well, you know, so much for his Hall of Fame candidacy. It was nice while it lasted, but that's over with. But he's personally gotten that back on track in a huge way. The team's winning. He's playing great defensively. He's hitting well over 300. He's delivering in every manner you could possibly want, exactly what you would want from a catcher with Hall of Fame credentials. And I think, you know, I talked to Tim Kurchin and Scott Miller and Jason Stark, and they all think he's right back on track. His, you know, his career numbers aren't, you know, the longevity isn't quite there. Something like 1,400 hits and, you know, the home runs are down. But this guy missed, you know, basically missed 2 years when you count the year that he took off and a year after hip surgery. And he had that broken leg that cost him pretty much a season. So he's coming from behind. But he made such an impact on the Giants, on baseball, and on fans of the game in his first few seasons. He, you know, quickly, he's got 3 rings. You know, within his first 3 seasons, he had 2 rings, an MVP, a Rookie of the Year. He signs a big contract. I mean, right then, he was a Hall of Famer in my mind. And, you know, I've talked to guys around the Giants who said he looked like a Hall of Famer to me like 2 months into his rookie year. So he's just that good, and I'm glad he's coming back into the picture.
Yeah, you really painted a very good picture of him. And, you know, the great Leonard Coppett said, if you really have to debate it, usually they're not. And my feeling is, also Leonard said, when you see a Hall of Famer, you know it.
Oh, yeah.
And when I see Posey, I know it. And that's my feeling.
No, I totally agree with that. It takes me about 5 minutes to fill out my ballot every year. You know, I've already thought about it. You know, I don't think about much else in sports, really, but I've thought about it over the years, and I don't need to know the numbers because I know what
right.
I saw.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you another one, and this is sort of the three-dot lounge as we go through baseball. A lot went on this week. How about Joey Votto? And what he's done since the All-Star break, I think it was 16 homers, 39 RBIs since the break, I think, something ridiculous like that. But he led the league in on-base percentage 7 times. And, you know, if you said he led the league in batting 7 times, it's a Hall of Famer. You wouldn't think about it. On-base percentage is huge today. And Joey Votto and Hal McCoy made the argument, other people making the argument this week, Joey Votto, a slam dunk Hall of Famer.
Well, I don't know about slam dunk only because he's never really been in that conversation at the forefront, but I agree that he's definitely a Hall of Famer in my book. He reminds me of Tony Gwynn. He's the kind of guy mm-hmm. who can almost orchestrate what's going to happen up there. He's on an unbelievable home run binge right now, and Castellanos has been getting hit a lot, the great Reds slugger. And they announced on the Reds broadcast, you know, that 3 times after he's been hit, Joey Votto has homered to say, like, you know, well, take that, you know, knock it off. How about this? And he did it again right when they said it. He did it for the 4th time. And, he could come around next year and say, I'm only going to hit doubles and singles. And he would do that and hit 338. You know, I mean, he takes such ownership of the plate that it's unbelievable. And that's another thing. If you see that, you see enough of that, you don't even know the numbers, you don't care because he's just owning it.
Yep, you watch the career, and that's enough for me on him. How about Ohtani this week? Hit homer, maybe we just don't get enough publicity about him in the Bay Area, but he hit homer number 40 this week, and he threw 8 innings in a game. Now just stand back and think about Babe Ruth and all the great two-way players, you know. They never did it at the same time like he's doing it. I think it's incredible what he's doing.
No, that's a great word. That word is so overused. It's overused about 90% of the time you see it. But it really does stretch the limits of credibility, which is what the word means. And he's been doing these things all season that, you know, you see that. Homer number 40, great outing, and you go, well, he did it again, you know, and you don't, I guess you can't put it in the screaming headlines every single time, but he could hit 50.
Oh, come on, really? No kidding?
Yeah, and he could pitch a no-hitter. I mean, good mm-hmm. grief. I love that he went 8 innings, by the way. That was a great sign. If you wonder if maybe all this has taken some kind of a toll on him, it certainly looks like quite the opposite. And he's such a great show. You know, he takes the big, massive swing. And like so many of the great sluggers, Ruth and Reggie Jackson, everybody else. His strikeouts are dramatic as well, you know, and he's just it's such a shame he plays for that ludicrous organization that just they could add eight more superstars and still finish 10th.
Yeah, they're conceding the MVP to him, sort of like they're doing it to Tatis. But I'll tell you something, when it's all said and done, Max Muncy is going to be in there. Crawford or Posey, they're probably going to split the vote a little bit, I think, for the Giants. And the other guy is Freddie Freeman. How about the week this guy is having? And he hit for the cycle this week.
He's another guy that reminds me of Votto. The way he guides the ball all over the yard, he's a guy who steps up there and surveys how they're playing him, and you got to pretty much play him straight. But if he sees any kind of advantage that he can get, he's going to take advantage of it. An unbelievable opposite field hitter with power, just a proven 300 guy. He's definitely in there. I wouldn't rule out Willy Adames either. What he's done for the Brewers has been absolutely huge. Muncy for sure, and Crawford and Tatis. That's going to be interesting. Tatis could still, you know, reclaim his number one spot there. We thought he had for months this season, but it's going to be tough, especially if he has to sit out a little bit more with that shoulder. So we'll see. But it's going to be great. It's great to see Crawford right in the middle of that.
All right, I'll give you another one. Manager of the Year, and of course people talk about Gabe Kapler, and he's very, very deserving of keeping this team together and getting him this far, and we'll see how they get to the finish line. How about David Bell? How would you like to have his bullpen? And have to work that bullpen every game. Really. And every game, you know, the starters go in six innings, five, six, seven. You know, Miley could go a little further, Sonny Gray a little bit, you know, and Malley. But this guy's got to go to a bullpen that is explosive. And he's got him in a position, Bruce. They've tied San Diego for the wild card. How about that?
That's really wild. That's a great point. And he was with the Giants organization for a while. He's very well liked around here. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing harder. You know, we saw Bochy. Bochy was a master at using a bullpen, and he had great relievers out there. But still, it was a real trick. But here's a guy doing it with – these guys are far from great. I mean, there's no, you know, Affelt or Javier Lopez out there.
There's nobody.
Yeah. And you know, also, Brian Snitker – who people kind of, you know, snicker at him. He's kind of an old school guy, but you know they've won, I think, what, three division titles in a row. They were completely gone and apparently out of it when Acuna went out. Now they got a 4-game lead. He's going to be in there, Kapler wins it though. Kapler wins it.
He should. I mean, for doing this with this team, it took a lot to keep this team together and to manage this team and to manage the games. And you can say it's analytics and all this, but he still has to manage the game and get the respect of the players, and I think he's done that. And I think that's the amazing part. All right, how about Miguel Cabrera? They cut away every game to every at-bat. I feel terrible for the guy. I mean, really. What, can't someone just lay one in like Denny McClain did to Mickey Mantle and let the guy hit his 500th and let's go home?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not like the Tigers are playing games that are going to make a difference, you know, most of the time. And I feel bad because he is truly an all-time great. He's got one of the prettiest right-handed swings I've ever seen. And just a magnificent presence in the game. I love that guy. He'll get it. I mean, but after a while, it gets to be a little bit oppressive, you know. Somebody will probably lay one in there for him. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if he'll actually tell Cabrera that it's coming, but.
You know. And they should.
Just
get it all, because it's just painful to watch it each time they cut away. How about the Mets owner? This week, challenging the players and complaining about the way they play and all this. And he sort of channeled George Steinbrenner.
Yeah, Charlie Finley. Jeez, he called players names. I mean, he had guys that wouldn't speak to him. Reggie Jackson, Raleigh Fingers, Vida Blue. They hated him for how he talked about them, you know, in public. Now, this was mild compared to Finley and of course, George Steinbrenner. He was just an oppressive tyrant who was also widely despised in the clubhouse. So it was, to me, I was like, whatever. But still, the fact is, you know, especially in today's game where everything's a little bit more sensitive and everything's on social media, you know, it wasn't that he was wrong, but those words don't come from the owner. It's just a bad thing to all of a sudden have. You know, everybody's talking about it, you know, and so are they really that bad, you know, and the players are grumbling about it. Just bad mood, bad theater, you know, man, come on.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of changes in New York. I'll guarantee you that over this winter.
Alonzo won't be one of them, I'll tell you that. That guy's awesome every night here and in L.A.
Manager, general manager, who knows? But there'll be a lot of changes because this guy wants – he's got money, and he likes being in the back page of the newspaper. So it's a bad combination when you look at it. Other thing, Bill Freehand passed away. And, you know, Bruce, I didn't realize this, a 10-time All-Star, at least 10-time All-Star, a few gold gloves, caught the Tigers pitching staff in the 60s. I think University of Michigan, tough catcher, never really a Hall of Famer, but he made his mark with the Tigers, Bill Freehand.
Well, he totally did. He was durable. He was always in the MVP conversation for several years for sure. He made, like you say, he made the All-Star team routinely. I think his biggest impediment to real recognition was Johnny Bench, because Johnny Bench was playing at the same time, and he was struck everyone as the best catcher really ever. I mean, I still feel that way about Bench, and yeah, that was tough, but. When the Tigers got to the World Series and won it in 68, and he played that whole season, hit a bunch of homers, reliable guy. I think he was second in the MVP voting that year. I'll tell you, around Detroit, and I've heard from a lot of people who were Tigers fans after he passed, said, you got to recognize this guy. He doesn't get enough credit, and I'm glad we're talking about him.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the catchers just off the top of my head in the American League and his period from, mid-60s, to the beginning of the 70s, whatever it was. But who are we talking about? Earl Batty? Andy Etchebarren? I'm trying to think who Elston Howard? John Romano?
Yeah, Elston Howard was a little bit, he was mostly, in the early 60s was his prime, and same with Earl Batty. But I think, Freehand was pretty, when you make it 10 times, he was pretty much the guy in the American League.
Yeah.
That to me is the power of Bench, what he did. It was so overwhelming that there was never any question about who the best catcher of that era was. It's not even close, really. That's tough when you're talking about Hall of Fame.
Yeah, interesting. I'm glad that we could recognize him. I didn't realize that many All-Star appearances.
And usually, I didn't either.
or that many top five MVP votes, too. All right, interesting. The Milwaukee Brewers. Bruce, the red flags are all over it for me. Peralta's shoulder hurts. Not only did he aggravate it on a swing, but it bothered him a day or two before. Woodruff gets knocked around again. Burns was terrific, but Brett Anderson, the Brewers rely on that big three. That big three is sort of leaking oil, and the Giants are going to get him at the right time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see how that goes. But and as you have been talking about throughout the season, Christian Yelich is just not the same hitter. Right? He's got a sore back that bothers him occasionally, and that's huge. That's huge in anything, even if you're like raking the leaves, But he's come along a little bit lately. But they need him to be an MVP style guy, and they really do. I mean, he's got to be the anchor of that team. A little bit of a slip up right now, but I mean, we said that about the Dodgers. They were in dire straits. Now you can't beat them in any way right now. They just have a. I like the organization. They got a lot of leadership on the team. Lorenzo Cain is great, and they do have the studly pitchers, and they got Josh Hader at the finish. Real good bullpen. Craig Counsell is pretty solid. So I don't expect the Giants to dominate them by any means because they're in a little bit of a slump. It could go the other way.
Yeah. This is the strength of the Brewers is that bullpen. And the manager. And Kelton Wong is a nice second baseman.
Yeah, he's very good, yeah.
Let's look at a history moment, August 21st. And, boy, it's we're getting to that point of September. I can't wait. 1982, Raleigh Fingers gets his 300th save. I didn't realize this. He was the first one to do it. 300 saves for Raleigh Fingers. And, of course, he was an athletic for many years.
Yeah, I think you have to put him in there with Eckersley and Mariano Rivera, Trevor Hoffman, Goose Gossage. When you talk about the greatest relievers of all time, he has to be. He's definitely top five, I think, without any doubt. And, you know, real good athlete. Comes out of Southern California. He was a big star in the American Legion. They won the whole thing nationally. He hit. He was an outfielder and a pitcher. He hit like 450 in a bunch of tournaments. And just the A's actually were looking at him as an outfielder. And when they signed him, they finally thought, well, we got to use that arm. And he was a starter for about 2 or 3 years and didn't really become the closer until Dick Williams took the managing job in 71. And about midsummer, he started closing, and he did so much for the next, you know, 15 years. But the great thing about him that I always remember is that he was a closer, and you might see him in the sixth. I looked it up. He had 4 World Series games. You know, they were in the 3 straight in the mid 70s. 4 times in the World Series, he came on and pitched 3 plus innings. I mean, it's today you go 2 and everybody breaks out in hives.
And didn't he throw the pitch to the bench? You know, the 3-2 pitch.
Yes.
It looked like they were going to walk him, and Dick Williams went out, and then he threw it right down the middle, and bench took it.
Yeah, an even bigger surprise than Romo and Miguel Cabrera. I mean, that was on the World Series stage. Yeah, great, great moment. The A's were just, they were such a thinking man's ball club, and fingers just fit in there perfectly. And, you know, he would just, all those World Series games, you look at him, he'd be pitching almost every one of them. I mean, he was a daily problem.
Great Hall of Famer, 300 saves. Very quickly, Matt Stairs, pinch hit home run number 21. He passed Cliff Bird Dog Johnson, who had 20. And I asked Art Howe, I said, why'd they call him Bird Dog? He said, well, because he was always going to the backstop to retrieve the ball. But Matt Stairs, he had the body of a pinch hitter, and he liked to swing the bat.
Yeah, I love that guy. And he wound up with 23. And 15 of those were after he turned 38.
Wow.
He was the kind of guy we don't see enough of today. Just this big, burly guy. He's a pinch hitter. That's what he is. And you're looking at him the whole game. When's he going to be used? And, you know, we're lucky to have the Giants make such great use of pinch hitters. They really have a good thing going there. There's so many options. And, I Matt Stairs goes down for my money with you know, Jerry Lynch and Smokey Burgess and Gates Brown, and to me, the greatest of all time. And by the way, McCovey had 16 pinch hit homers.
Amazing.
That's a lot. My guy's Manny Mota, though. He was just a fantastic, reliable pinch hitter just forever. He's still hitting line drive somewhere against somebody.
Yep, we just overlooked Dave Philly. That was the only one.
Oh, yeah, George Crowe.
Right. That was a great part of the game because these guys hung around. There was no DH. And they'd get their one at bat, and they'd smack it. And we'd wait to see it. All right. Hey, great to talk to you today. We got more tomorrow, and let's see what happens with Gausman and Manaea today. I'll guarantee you it will be an unusual game.
It'll be different.
It'll be different. All right. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks a lot, Marty. Talk soon.
All right. That's the great Bruce Jenkins. Always enjoy chatting with him on the weekend. All right. Bill and I are going to talk with Vince Cotroneo, one of the play-by-play voices of Oakland A's radio, and we're going to do it right after this, KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.